On a few rare occasions in radio history, some individual program has touched the magic button of universal appeal, and thus has won a place in the ranks of radio classics. On Independence Day a year ago, Fulton Lewis Jr. presented a program that drew immediate nationwide response. It was acclaimed by cabinet officers, by statesmen in Congress, by civic leaders in every corner of America. Mayors and patriotic organizations called for recordings of it for public gatherings. School systems requested it to be played in classrooms. Thousands of printed copies were requested by radio listeners. There have been many requests to have that program repeated this year. And so, on this July the 4th, the Mutual Network is proud to announce that Mr. Lewis has agreed to present this radio masterpiece once again. Printed copies and recordings are available at cost through station WOL in Washington.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. This is Fulton Lewis, Jr., bringing you, as usual at this time, the news of the day. And this very vital and memorable news tonight may have terrific impact on the future of the world. This afternoon, July the 4th, 1776, the Continental Congress, which is sitting here in Philadelphia, finally has taken the irretraceable step. At a very tense and momentous session this afternoon, they adopted and issued a formal proclamation that these 13 colonies of ours here in this new world no longer are colonies of the British Crown. We no longer recognize the sovereignty of King George III. It was what you might call a declaration of independence, telling the world that, beginning immediately, we are a free and separate nation, a union of states, and we request the other nations of the world to accord us all rights and privileges as such. As you know, Congress has been debating this question for some days now. Exactly 5 weeks ago tomorrow, on June the 7th, Mr. Richard Henry Lee, a member of Congress from Virginia, introduced a resolution declaring, to use the exact words, that these united colonies are, and of right ought to be, free and independent states, and that they are hereby absolved from all allegiance to the British Crown. As you well know, that caused a terrific controversy in Congress. There are two widely separated factions. One's what you might call the isolationist group. They believe that we should break with the old world, we should live our own life, and we should not involve ourselves in affairs across the Atlantic, and we should not submit to dictation and interference and meddling from across the Atlantic. These isolationists say that we should govern ourselves and make our own place in the world, and they are the ones who have been supporting Mr. Lee of Virginia. The other faction is what might be called, well, the appeasement group. It's the Tory party, really. They believe that we should try to reach a peaceful settlement with King George, should remain under the British Crown. They are not sure that we're strong enough to stand on our own feet or to fight off the British troops that are now out here. The discussion between the gentlemen in Congress has been very heated at times, and it's gone on day after day, evening after evening, in the lobbies and the taverns here in Philadelphia. Everything has been done in executive session, behind closed doors as usual, of course, and day before yesterday, they finally brought the issue to a vote in the halls of Congress. They approved the Lee resolution by a rather large majority. The actual vote itself, of course, has been kept secret. But I was told on good authority that it passed by a very comfortable majority. Now, nearly a week ago, even before the Lee resolution was adopted, President John Hancock, who comes from Massachusetts, as you well know, appointed a special committee to draft a formal proclamation carrying out that resolution, this proclamation that was issued today. And perhaps you'd like to have the names of the gentlemen on that committee. There was a distinguished publisher and editor of Philadelphia, Mr. Benjamin Franklin. There was Mr. Robert R. Livingston, the young lawyer from New York, Mr. Roger Sherman of Connecticut, who began life as a shoemaker, another young lawyer from Virginia who has been in Congress only a short while, Mr. Thomas Jefferson, and the able lawyer from Massachusetts, Mr. John Adams. Supposedly, it was Mr. Adams who was to have drafted this momentous document, but someday when the facts leak out, as they probably will, I think you'll discover that young Mr. Jefferson really was the one who did it, and there was a rather interesting reason behind that. Mr. Adams, as you know, has been one of the leading advocates behind the scenes in this movement to declare our independence. But he's felt that he's unpopular and that he has too much of the label of extremism on him, and that if he personally were to author this document, there might be prejudice against it in the public mind. He felt that Mr. Jefferson had a much better flair for writing than he did, also much greater ability to express himself. And so after they'd all adjourned to a quiet back room in a little private house near the State House, the committee insisted that Mr. Jefferson do the actual drafting of the proclamation. Incidentally, in spite of Mr. Jefferson's youth, he is attracting considerable attention here in Philadelphia. If his constituents in Virginia allow him to remain in Congress a while and to get a little seniority, it's quite possible that you may hear considerable from him in the future. Day before yesterday, when the Lee resolution was adopted, this special committee adopted already had a tentative draft of the proclamation ready for consideration. And that tentative draft was laid before Congress at once. It was debated all day yesterday, and they went back to work on it again today. There were very few changes from the original form. This afternoon, the final vote was taken, and the proclamation was approved. President John Hancock signed his name at the bottom of the corrected draft, and so did the Secretary of Congress, Mr. Thompson, and the deed was done. It's too lengthy to read in full, but the first part of it is particularly important. It says in these words, "When in the course of human events it becomes necessary for one people to dissolve the political bands which have connected them with another, and to assume among the powers of the earth the separate and the equal station to which the laws of nature and of nature's God entitle them, a decent respect to the opinions of mankind require that they should declare the causes which impel them to the separation. We hold these truths to be self-evident, that all men are created equal, that they are endowed by their Creator with certain unalienable rights, that among those rights are life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, that to secure these rights, governments are instituted among men, deriving their just powers from the consent of the governed, that whenever any form of government becomes destructive of these ends, it's the right of the people to alter it or to abolish it, and to institute a new government, laying its foundation on such principles and organizing its powers in such form as to them shall seem most likely to affect their safety and their happiness." Then it goes on to list the various grievances that we have against our king, or rather against the man who was our king until this afternoon, the oppression, the interference, the taxation, the arrogance, and finally it closes with the actual declaration to the world that from now on we are free and independent states and we have renounced all allegiance to the British crown. The document then was taken to the local printing shop of Mr. John Dunlap, just around the corner. Copies of it were struck off to be distributed to the public. And it's been very interesting to see the reaction of the few citizens who have read that so far. Even some of the aristocrats, the very best social families of Philadelphia, who, you know, took the attitude in the beginning of this fight for liberty that this was a movement of hoodlums and rowdies, even some of them have nodded their approval as they read. Of course, it's been impossible to get any wide circulation of this document, but this afternoon and this afternoon and this evening, there's been no demonstration or celebration, of course, but Mr. Franklin, the publisher, has given orders that the entire document is to be printed in the next edition of his newspaper, the Pennsylvania Evening Post, which will come out on Saturday, day after tomorrow, and in that way the public will have an opportunity to read and digest it. The city officials have planned a general celebration in front of the State House on Monday. There'll be music. There probably will be a huge crowd. You know, the population of Philadelphia is almost 20,000 people now, and it's quite conceivable that several thousand people might be on hand. The plan is to read this Declaration of Independence, if you wish to call it that, from the steps of the State House, and then to ring the huge bell in the steeple to announce to the world the newfound liberty of the new world. To be entirely objective, it's rather difficult to stand off and evaluate a development of this kind today. It's hard to see just at this moment whether this means the beginning of a great and powerful nation based on the principle of peace and justice and freedom, or whether the Tories may be right when they say that people cannot rule themselves. Only time will tell that if the Tories are right. 10 years from now, we'll find this proclamation of today just a forgotten scrap of paper. But if these young men of Congress, and most of them are young, you know, the chief support behind Mr. Adams on this move for independence has come from the younger men, most of them still in their 30s, like this young Mr. Jefferson. If they are right, who knows? Someday this country might grow to have as many as, even 1 million people, and this 4th day of July might be celebrated as Independence Day. And the State House may go down in history as Independence Hall and the Big Bell. There that will ring in honor of American liberty next Monday might be known the world over as Liberty Bell. In the meantime, about our national defense, the dispatches from New York are not too encouraging. General Washington is building up his army as much as he can, you know, and he has a tremendous force there at the present time. He has over 10,000 men to defend the city from the British. But the military experts are rather fearful that even that is not enough to hold off the invading fleet under the command of Lord Howe. One of the greatest difficulties is that public sentiment in New York City is not in support of this revolution. The internationalist sentiment there is very strong indeed. There's serious danger that most of the population of the city will help the enemy instead of helping our own forces when Sir William Howe does begin to attack. And in that connection, there's a special dispatch from Paris tonight which says that Portugal has adopted something similar to that as a deliberate plan of warfare against Spain. Portugal, you know, is very much in need of colonies. She wants sources of raw materials, and she's had hungry eyes on the Spanish colony of Brazil for a long, long time. It seems that Portuguese ships have been visiting the ports of Brazil for many months now, leaving soldiers who are disguised as travelers and businessmen. No one suspected them, but when the Portuguese fleet arrived and began to attack from the water, these soldiers in disguise suddenly threw off their disguises, brought out firearms, and attacked from the inside. And the result has been that a large part of Brazil already has been lost to Portugal by Spain in the last few months. There is one encouraging angle from the point of view of our own American prospects, and that is that we have developed a new and secret weapon that is far superior to anything the British have. It's a new form of rifle with a very long barrel that can shoot nearly three times as far as the British muskets can shoot. And so General Washington's men are able to kill the British off before they can get in shooting range of us. Lord Howe, it seems, has offered a reward of £5 to any man who will capture one of our soldiers with one of those weapons. He wants to send it back to England, presumably to be copied for his own men. So there's the story, ladies and gentlemen. That's the top of the news on this fourth day of July, 1776. And it may be a very momentous day in world history. And if this thing that we Americans have done today does live, if this theory that you and I can rule ourselves is sound and is able to continue, I wonder whether those who come after us will understand what we are going through to achieve this freedom. Let's pray that in 1800, in the year 1900, even further, let's say in 1941, the American people, whoever they are and whatever they have, and however great and wealthy and comfortable they may be, let's hope that for their own good, they will understand their freedom, they'll appreciate what it means, and they'll keep themselves strong enough to protect it. It's a bloody job getting it once it's gone. But that's the top of the news as it looks from here, ladies and gentlemen. Until Monday evening, good night.
Fulton Lewis, Jr. may be heard again Monday at this same hour. These commentaries on the day's news originate in the studios of WOL in the nation's capital. Frank Blair speaking. Broadcasting system.